Chapter 8. Nicaea. Advantage. Bacca Triumvirum. In his private quarters, Zadkiel regarded the picked screen on the console before him with interest. The room was drenched in sepulchral light, the suggestion of idols and craven icons visible at the edge of the shadows. Zadkiel's face was bathed in cold, stark light from the picked screen, making him appear gaunt and almost lifeless. Battle scenarios were displayed on the surface of the screen. An astral body the size of a moon exploded moments after being struck by a missile payload. Debris spread outward in a wide field, showering a nearby planet with burning meteors. An icon in the scenario represented a ship, the Furious Abyss, as it moved through the debris field. Trajectory markers with distances indicated alongside were displayed, originating at the ship icon and terminating at the planet's surface. The image paused momentarily and then cycled back to the beginning again. Zadkiel switched his attention to the vertical row of three supplementary screens attached to the main picked screen. The uppermost one was full of streaming data that bore the Mechanicum seal. Calculations concerning armor tolerances, projected orbital weapon strengths, and extrapolated endurance times based upon the first statistic versus the other scrolled by. Angles, probable firepower intensities, and shield indexes were all considered in exacting detail. The middle screen contained four stage-by-stage picts showing the effects of a particular viral strain upon human beings. A time code at the bottom right corner of the final pict displayed 00:01:30. The final screen displayed projected casualty rates. McCrag orbital defences, -49%. McCrag orbital fleet, -75%. McCrag population, -93%. Cor Pharon and the rest of the Word-Bearer's fleet would account for the rest. Zadkiel smiled. With a single blow, they would all but wipe out the Ultramarines' homeworld and the Legion with it.
"I saw it myself, with this very eye," snarled Bryngar, pointing to the non-cloudy orb. "The caller by Throne King did not bind me so much that I cannot see what is before my face."
Bryngar had joined Cestus, Skral, and Antigis in a waiting room outside the Medibay where Eradis ministered to Motep after his collapse. The Wolfguard stalked back and forth across the small, sanitized chamber, which was all white tile and stark lighting, impatiently awaiting the Thousand Sun's return.
"No man, not even an Astartes, could have faced those hordes and lived," offered Skral, "although I would have gladly laid down my life to dispatch them to the hell of the warp."
The World-Eater was raging as he spoke, blood fever clouding his vision as the endless need for violence and slaughter nagged at him. He had confessed earlier that he remembered little of the fight, engaged as he was in a haze of fury, only waking in the access corridor to the primary dock. Bryngar had deliberately chosen not to enlighten him, deciding that he didn't want to risk the World-Eater's wrath.
"Aye, but I can think of no other way that such a deed could have been done," said Bryngar, coming to rest at last.
"You speak of witchcraft, Space Wolf," said Antigis with a dark glance at Cestus.
The Ultramarine's captain had remained silent throughout. If what Bryngar said was true, then it had dire ramifications. What was beyond doubt was that Motep's actions had saved the Wrathful from certain doom, but the edicts of the Emperor, laid down at Nicaea, were strict and without flexibility. Such things could not be ignored. To do so would damn them as surely as the Word-Bearers. Cestus would not embrace that fate, however rational it might seem.
"We do not know for certain that Motep employed such methods and devices, only that he lived where perhaps he should not have," he said.
"Is that not proof enough?" Bryngar cried. "The acts of Zadkiel, of this treacherous vermin, is one thing, but to have a heretic aboard ship is quite another. Let me wring the truth out of him. I'll—"
"You will do what, brother?"
asked Motep, standing in the open archway of the waiting room. Like the other Astartes, he wasn't wearing his helmet, but he was also stripped out of his power armor and clad in robes. Apothecary Leradis, together with another of the honor guard, Amrix, there by way of additional security, was visible behind him. The apothecary was collecting his various apparatus as stooped legion serfs scurried around him, gathering up Motep's discarded armour. Bryngar stared at the Thousand Sun, fists clenched, his face reddening as he bared his fangs. "Leradis?" asked Cestus, stepping in front of the Space Wolf in order to defuse the tension. The apothecary had just emerged into the room. Amrix was standing silently next to him.
"No lasting injuries that his metabolism cannot cure," Leradis reported.
"Good," Cestus replied.
"Rejoin your battle brothers in the barracks." "My captain," said the apothecary, and gratefully left the charged atmosphere of the waiting room with Amrix, obsequious legion serfs, in tow.
"What happened at the dock?" asked Skral, weighing in on Bryngar's behalf. "I lost 2 legion brothers to that fight. How are you able to survive?"
The 2 world-eaters had been discovered later, recovered by blind servitors, before the dock was locked down permanently and bulkheads put in place. The unfortunate Astartes had been transfixed by the blade claws of the warpspawn and died gurgling blood. Their scorched remains rested in one of the Wrathful's mausoleums, awaiting proper ceremony.
"When I reached the auto-destruct console, I found that the protocols were offline," Motep explained, his face unreadable. "Favor smiled on me, though, as during the battle a fuel line linked to one of the docking ports had come loose from its housing, and I was able to ignite it. I fought my way to a place where I was shielded from the blast, and the resultant conflagration destroyed the entities with purging fire."
"Your silver tongue is fat with lies," Bryngar accused him, stepping forward. "The air is thick with the stink of them."
Motep turned his stony gaze on the Space Wolf.
"I can assure you, son of Russ, whatever odor you are detecting, it is not emanating from me. Perhaps you should seek your answer nearer to your own bedraggled self."
Bryngar roared and launched himself at the Thousand Sun, bearing him to the ground with his massive bulk.
"Drink it in, witch!" snarled the wolf guard, intent on forcing Motep's head into the tiled floor.
A splash of spittle landed on the Thousand Sun's grimacing face as he thrashed against the Space Wolf's superior strength. Cestus, using all of his weight, smashed into Bryngar's side to dislodge him. The wolf roared again as he was toppled from the Thousand Sun. Skral was about to wade in, but Antigis blocked his path, the ultramarine's hand resting meaningfully on the pommel of his short blade.
"Stand fast, brother," he warned.
Skral's hand wavered near his chain axe, but he snorted in mild contempt and in the end relented. This was not the fight he wanted. Bryngar rolled from Cestus's body charge and swung to his feet. The ultramarine's captain was quick to interpose himself between Space Wolf and Thousand Sun, his posture low in a readied battle stance.
"Stand aside, Cestus," Bryngar growled.
Cestus did not move, but instead kept his gaze locked with the Space Wolf.
"Do so now,"
Bryngar warned him again, his tone low and dangerous.
"This is not the way of the Astartes," Cestus said, his voice calm and level in response.
Behind the ultramarine, Motep got to his feet, a little shaken, but otherwise defiant in the face of his aggressor.
"No, it is not the way of Gilliman's legion, you mean," answered Bryngar.
"Even so, I am in charge of this ship and this mission," Cestus asserted, "and if you have issue with my commands, then you will take them up with me."
"He defies the Emperor's decree, and yet you defend him?"
Bryngar raged and took a step forward. He stopped when he realized that the ultramarine's short blade was at his throat. "If Motep is to answer charges, then he will do so at my behest and in a proper trial," Cestus told him, the blade in his hand steady. "The feral laws of Fenris are not recognized on this ship, battle brother." Bryngar growled again as if weighing up his options. In the end, he backed down.
"You are no brother of mine,"
he snarled and stalked from the chamber. Skral followed him, a thin smile on his lips.
"That went well," said Antigi, sighing with relief. He had not been relishing the idea of facing one of Angron's legion, nor had he a desire to see Bryngar go toe-to-toe with his brother captain.
"Sarcasm does not become you, Antigis," said Cestus darkly. Bryngar was his friend. They had fought together in countless campaigns. He owed the old wolf his life, and more than once Antigis, too, had a similar debt to the wolf guard. Cestus had defied him, however, and in so doing had besmirched his honour. Yet how could he not give Motep the benefit of the doubt without proof of his supposed actions? Cestus admitted to himself that his experience in the reactor chamber at Vangelis, the vision of Macragge he had witnessed, might be affecting his decisions.
"I am grateful to you, Cestus," said Motep, smoothing out his robes after the Space Wolf's rough treatment.
"Don't be," the Ultramarine snapped, in part angry at himself for his self-doubt. His gaze was cold and unforgiving as it turned on the Thousand Sun. "This is not over, nor am I satisfied with your explanation for what happened at the dock. You will be remanded to your quarters until we leave the warp, and I have time to decide what is to be done."
"Antigis," Cestus added, "have Admiral Kaminska send the new officer of the watch and a squad of arms men to escort Captain Motep to his cell."
Antigis nodded briskly and went off towards the bridge.
"I could overwhelm a mere band of arms men and defy this order," Motep said, matching the Ultramarine's steely gaze.
"Yes, you could," said Cestus. "But you will not."
"Let it not be said," uttered Zadkiel, "that the warp is without imagination."
Before Admiral Zadkiel, who, having left his private quarters, was in the Furious Abyss's cathedra, stood rank upon rank of word-bearers. Their presence in the vaulted chamber was an echo of what had faced him at the vessel's inaugural launch at Thule. It was a sight that filled Zadkiel with a sense of power. The warriors represented the seventh company of the Quillborn chapter, one of those that made up the greater Word-Bearer's Legion. Every chapter had its own traditions and its own role within Lorgar's word. The Quillborn were so named because their traditions emphasized their birth, created in the laboratories and apothecarians of Colchis. They were written into existence, born as syllables of the word. A dedicated naval formation, the Quillborn were true marines, fighting ship to ship, completely at home, battling through the cramped structure of a starship. At their head was Assault Captain Balanus, the acting captain of the company, although Zadkiel was their overlord. "The ghost of one of their vessels has waylaid them," continued Zadkiel with rising oratory. "It was promised that in the warp we would find our allies. The fate of our pursuers aboard the Wrathful has shown that promise to have been kept."
Balanus stepped forwards. "Who will hear the word?" he bellowed.
As one, 100 word-bearers raised their guns and chanted in salute.
"They will be harrying us from here to Macragge," said the assault captain, his belligerence a contrast to Zadkiel's authoritative confidence. "And they will die for it. Perhaps the warp will send them to us in the end, so we can show them how we deal with the blind in real space."
The word-bearers cheered. Zadkiel saw Altis among them, and felt a pang of agitation at his presence in the throng. His fate is written, Zadkiel thought.
"The warp is yet a strange place to us," said Zadkiel, "though it holds nothing for us to fear, for Lorgar knows it better than any mind ever has. You will be assailed by mysteries. You might dream that which your mind has hidden from you. Perhaps you will even see them as clear as day. These are the ways of the warp. Remember, in all things the word of Lorgar, and it will lead you back to sanity. Lose sight of the word, and your mind will be carried away on currents from which it might never return. Make no mistake, the warp is dangerous. It is the word and the word alone that lets us navigate its waters. Soon we must make dock. The earlier battle took more of a toll than we thought. The way station at Bacca Triumvirum is our next destination."
Zadkiel did not tell them that his overconfidence had resulted in the damage to the ship that meant they were forced into a detour. A lucky hit from the waning moon's lances had cut off the engineering teams from the Furious Abyss's stores of fuel oil, as well as rupturing the primary coolant line. Without regular supply, they could not function, and so it was imperative that the damage be cleared in order to allow the crews access. That could only be done whilst at dock.
"Shortly after that, we shall be at Macragge," Zadkiel continued. "Then our chapter of the word will be completed. To your duties, word-bearers, you are dismissed."
The word-bearers filed out of the cathedra, many of them heading to reclusium cells. Balanus approached the pulpit where Zadkiel was standing.
"We won't have long at Bacca," he said. "What are your orders to the astropathic choir?"
"I need to make contact with my Lord Cor Feron," said Zadkiel, "and apprise him of our progress."
"What of Wasarik?" asked Balanus,
a momentary tremor evident in his outward resolve at mention of the name.
"He stirs," replied Zadkiel. "We have only to cement our pact with the Empyrean with blood, and then he will act. The lapdogs of the Emperor are ever tenacious, my lord."
"Then we shall cast them off," Zadkiel told him. "But for now we wait. Asking too many favours of the Empyrean might not behove us well."
"As you wish, my lord," said Balanus, bowing slightly, but his reluctance was obvious. "Trust me to fulfil my duties to the word, Balanus, as I trust you," said Zadkiel.
"Yes, admiral," replied the assault captain.
Balanus saluted and headed for the engine decks. Zadkiel remained in the cathedra for a moment, deep in thought. It was so easy to lose sight of the word, to become wrapped up in power. It would have been simple for him to forget what he was and where his place was in the galaxy. That was why Lorgar had chosen him for this mission. There was no more dedicated servant of the word, save for Lorgar. Zadkiel knelt before the altar, murmured a few words of prayer, and headed back up towards the bridge.
"Captain Sestus," said Kaminska's voice over the ultramarine's helmet vox. The engine servitors of the Wrathful had managed to bring on ship communications back online.
"Speaking," he replied, more irritably than he'd intended. The confrontation with Bryngar in the Medibay waiting room was weighing on his mind, that and whatever Motep was hiding from them behind that veneer of indifference.
"Meet me on the bridge at once."
Sestus sighed deeply at the Admiral's curt response. He had intended to patrol the lower aft decks with Antigis, in the wake of the officer of the watch's death, together with all of his most experienced armsmen, the ship was short-handed. The Astartes captain had taken it upon himself to make up the shortfall and ensure that no other unforeseen difficulties arose for whatever time remained of their warp passage. Given Admiral Kaminska's tone, the patrol would have to wait. So Sestus and Antigis headed for the bridge. Kaminska kept a lean bridge when not in combat. Crewmen at the sensorium, navigation and engineering helms were all that were present. The Admiral was standing at a table, illuminated by a hololithic star map. She looked ragged as he approached her, with dark rings around her eyes and a greyish pallor to her complexion. Sestus couldn't help think how long it had been since she had slept. An Astartes could go for several days without, but Kaminska was merely human. He wondered how long she could keep going.
"My lord," she said, acknowledging the giant Astartes. "Admiral, what is it you wish to bring to my attention?"
Kaminska indicated the star map in front of her. It showed the sector of the galaxy around the dense galactic core. The core was impassable, and so much of the map was taken up with a blank void. Notations and calculations were scrawled in the margins. Beside the map was a printout from one of the sensorium Pict screens. It was a close-up of the Furious Abyss's hull.
"See this?" said Kaminska, indicating a white plume issuing from the side of the word-bearer's ship. The grainy resolution made it look like gas was being vented.
"They have an air leak?"
"Better than that," said Kaminska. "It's damage to the coolant lines. If they push the engines, the plasma reactors will burn up, and, pursued by this ship, if they want to stay ahead of us, they'll have to push the engines."
Sestus smiled grimly at the sudden turn in fortune. It was small recompense for all they'd lost.
"So the Furious Abyss will have to make dock to effect repairs," the ultramarine guessed. "Yes, they'll also be reloading ordnance and using the time to service their fighters after the battle outside the tertiary Corbo transit."
"Show me the location, Admiral," said Sestus, assuming that Kaminska had already planned their strategy in part.
Kaminska laid her finger on the hololithic display in triumph.
"Outside the solar system, there aren't many orbital docks that can support a ship that size."
The Baka system was already circled on the map.
"Baka," said Sestus. "My legion mustered there for the Caranthus Crusade. It's the Imperial Army's staging post for half the Galactic South. It has the only docks between the Galactic Core and Macragge that could handle the Furious Abyss," Kaminska told him. "I'd bet my commission that this is where they'll head."
Sestus thought for a moment. A plan was forming.
"How long before we break warp?"
"Several hours yet, but delay or not, we can't beat the Furious Abyss in a straight fight."
"Tell me this, Admiral," Sestus said, looking into Kaminska's eyes. "When is a ship most vulnerable?" Kaminska smiled, despite her weariness. "When she's at anchor," Cestus nodded. Turning away from the Admiral, he raised the other Astartes captains on the Vox Array and told them to meet him in the conference room immediately.
"What news have you, Brother Zadkiel?" mouthed the supplicant. Somehow the creature's lolling mouth formed the words in such a way that Cor Faron's short temper and self-confidence were perfectly enunciated.
"We are on our way, my lord," said Zadkiel, bowing.
Cor Faron was one of the arch-commanders of the Legion, foremost in Lorgar's reckoning. He was the Primarch's greatest champion, and it was he, this ancient warrior of countless battles, that could command the forces to attack Kalth, where Gilliman mustered, and destroy the Ultramarines utterly. It was a singular honour to be in Cor Faron's presence, albeit across the infinity of warp space, and Zadkiel was at once humbled by the experience. It was not an emotion he had great affinity with. The supplicant chamber of the Furious Abyss was bathed in darkness, but the presence of the astropathic choir behind the supplicant was powerful enough to remove the need for light. The choir consisted of 8 astropaths, but the Furious's astral cohort differed from those on any Imperial ship. The fact that there were 8 of them suggested their instability. The Furious Abyss's route through the warp and the forces brought to bear on it eroded the mind of an astropath with dismaying speed. And while such creatures were all blind, they did not have the heavy ribbed cables running from each eye socket attaching them to the macabre contraption clamped around the supplicant's swollen cranium.
"How goes your progress?" asked the mighty champion of the word-bearers.
"Half a day longer in the warp until we reach the fringes of the galactic core. We must make vital repairs at Bakka before heading onwards to Macragge."
"I recall no such deviation in the mission plan," Zadkiel.
Despite the fact that Cor Faron was doubtless aboard the Wordbearer's battle barge, the Infidus Imperator, in deep communion with its own astropathic choir, and speaking through a flesh puppet, his tone and manner were still dangerous.
"During a brief sortie with a fleet of Imperial ships, we sustained minor damage that could not be ignored, my lord," Zadkiel explained more hurriedly than he liked.
"A military action?" Cor Faron's disdain was clear. "Did any survive?"
"A single cruiser pursues us yet through the warp, liege."
"So they do not seek to raise a warning back on Terra," mused the arch-champion, his considered tone at odds with the slack-jawed, drooling visage of the supplicant. "A pity. I suspect Sor Talgron is itching in his traitor's shackles."
"I trust that Brother Talgron would have acquitted himself with distinction, Cor Faron."
In the eyes of Zadkiel, Sor Talgron's mission was not a desirable one. The Lord Commander was to remain in the solar system, his 4 companies ostensibly guarding Terra, in order to maintain the pretense that Lorgar still sided with the Emperor, when in fact he had been instrumental in the War Master's defection.
"It matters not, my lord. The prospect of word reaching Terra should not concern us. The warp's disquiet would prevent any warning getting to Macragge."
"I disagree," the supplicant sneered in an echo of Cor Faron's idiosyncratic expression. "Any deviation from the plan as written holds the potential for disaster. The entire word could go disobeyed."
"We will be a few hours at Bakka at the most, exalted lord," said Zadkiel plaintively, wary of his master's wrath. "Then we will be on our way. If our pursuer catches up with us, she will be destroyed as her sister ships were. In any case, we will not be late. Our passage through the warp was swift. But what of you, my lord?"
"We've joined up with the other elements of the Legion, and all is proceeding as written."
"Kalth has no hope?"
"None, my brother."
The supplicant lolled back, drooling blood as the connection was broken. The astropathic choir sank into silence, only their ragged breathing suggesting the great effort required to maintain the link across the immaterium. Zadkiel regarded the dead supplicant with detached interest. It was interesting to him to see how easily their physical forms could be destroyed when their minds were so strong. He considered that he would like to test that theory.
"All is well, my lord?"
asked Altis. The novice was standing behind Zadkiel.
"All is well, novice," said Zadkiel. "You will join Balanus at Bakka, Altis. Take the scholar, Coven. They will know to obey you."
Altis saluted.
"It will be an honour, Admiral."
One you have earned, novice. Now be about your duties.
Yes, my lord. Altis turned smartly and headed for the cell deck, where the scholar coven would be undergoing their scheduled meditation doctrine training. Zadkiel watched him go and smiled darkly. Such potential, such relentless ambition, the upstart would soon learn the folly of overreaching. Soon, Zadkiel told himself, forcing down a thrill of excitement, soon Gilliman will burn and Lorgar will rule the stars. Zadkiel could feel that time approaching. That age was in its infancy, but it only needed time to come about. Zadkiel knew this as surely as he had ever known anything, because it was written.
The Wrathful broke out of the warp, almost gasping in relief as it slid back into real space. The vessel's hull was torn and scorched, and chunks of its engine cowlings were ripped out. The winds of the warp had carved strange patterns into its armour plate around the prow and all over the underside. Claws had raked deep gouges all over the upper hull and torn turrets from their mountings. Sitting in her command throne, Admiral Kaminska looked out of the viewport and saw that the Wrathful had not emerged alone. Leprous and wretched with its pitted, rusting hull and disease-ridden ports, the Fireblade limped into existence alongside them. It was a ship of the damned, the thousands of souls aboard condemned to endless, torturous oblivion. Such a thing could not be allowed to endure. Kaminska gave the order to train laser batteries on the decrepit vessel. There was a few seconds' pause when the Wrathful unleashed a blistering salvo of fire. Without operational shields, the Fireblade crumpled under the onslaught. A few seconds more, and all that remained of the blighted escort ship was a scorched wreck and space debris. It was a duty that gave Kaminska no pleasure, but necessary all the same, much like the expulsion of their own dead. It was bad luck to keep the deceased on board, not to mention unhygienic. Bodies were never returned to their home port in the Saturnine fleet. What the void killed, it kept. The tiny gleaming sparks that fell away from the Wrathful were corpses enclosed in body bags, reflecting the light of the star Bacca that burned in a magnesium spark a few light hours away. Much closer was Bacca Triumvirum, a titanic gas cloud far bigger than the solar system's Jupiter, bright yellow streaked with violet and ringed with scores of shimmering bands of ice and rock. Bacca was a mystery, its gaseous form far too stormy and strange to admit any craft, while its rings were death traps many times more lethal than the rings of Saturn. Bacca's outlying moons, however, were habitable, each one almost the size of Terra, and all of them heavily populated. Rogalin, Sanctuary, Half-Hope, Grey Harbour. These hive cities were just fledglings compared to the teeming pinnacles of the solar system, but they were still home to billions of Imperial citizens. The Bacca system was one of the most populated in the Segmentum, certainly the largest concentration of human life this close to the galactic core. Bacca Triumvirum's 14th moon had no cities, but instead was enclosed within a thin black spiderweb that looked like some planetary disease. It was, in fact, the underlying structure of its orbital docks, held over the moon so that they could benefit from its enormous stores of geothermal energy. The moon was uninhabited, thanks to its relentlessly shifting tectonic plates and accompanying cataclysms, but the dockyards above Triumvirum 14 were some of the main reasons why Bacca was populated at all. Three assault boats headed out from the launch bays of the Wrathful. They approached the farthest docking spike of Bacca Triumvirum 14 and did so with stealth and subterfuge. It was imperative that they not be discovered by the enemy. It also meant that the troops on board would have a long trek to the Furious Abyss. Three assault boats, three discreet combat formations. Skral joined his legion warriors in one. Their mode of approach was a central avenue between overlooking docking towers, decks sprawling out from jutting bartizans, and the World Eaters and their captain were to take the lead. Two flanks branched out from the central avenue, and these channels would be taken by the Blood Claws, led by Bryngar, in spite of the Space Wolf's earlier altercation with Cestus, and a second group of World Eaters led by the only Ultramarine in the raiding party. Antigis sat bolt upright in the flight couch of the gloom-drenched troop hold of an assault boat as they made their way closer to the gaseous expanse that was Bacca Triumvirum and the moon that would support their embarkation. He was the only Ultramarine aboard the assault boat, accompanied as he was by two combat squads of Skral's remaining World Eaters. To Antigis' mind, They were brutal warriors, festooned with the trophies of war, crude kill markings, like badges of honour carved into their armour. Each and every one was possessed of a murderous mien, a faint echo of their Primarch's battle rage. Dimly, as if the infinite expanse of black space that existed between them had smothered it, Antigis recalled his last conversation with his captain.
"Stand aside, Antigis," Cestus barked, bedecked in a stripped-down version of his honour guard regalia and battle-ready with short blade, power sword, and bolter. Adjusting to the half-light of the assembly deck, Cestus saw that his battle brother was similarly attired. "I have told you before, Antigis, the Sons of Gilliman will remain aboard ship in case anything goes wrong. I shall accompany the mission as its leader to ensure that it goes to plan." Cestus had gone over the plan several times since it was first broached in the conference room to the rest of the Astartes captains. If they were to make the most of the Furious Abyss's current disposition, they would need to act in subterfuge and in secret. Even with that caveat in mind, the strike would need to be brutal and at close quarters. The World Eaters and the Space Wolves had no equals in that regard, save for the Sons of Sanguinius. But the Angels were far off in another part of the galaxy. These were the tools at their disposal. They had but to unleash them. The assault force was to infiltrate Baca Triumvirate 14, where the word-bearers had made dock, in three teams in a classic feint and strike manoeuvre, in order that they get close enough to scupper the ship at close range. Incendiary charges, crack and melter bombs, were to be carried as standard. It was a faint hope, but it was hope nonetheless, and all had embraced it. Even Bryngar, his demeanour sullen and belligerent, had acceded to the plan, doubtless eager to vent his wrath, much like his brother Captain Skral. "With respect, brother Captain," said Antigis levelly, purposefully standing his ground, "you shall not." Cestus's face creased in consternation. "I did not expect disobedience from you, Antigis." "It is not disobedience, sire, rather it is sense." Antigis still did not move. His expression brooked no argument. "Very well," said Cestus, letting his battle brother have this indulgence before he rebuked him for his insolence. "Explain yourself." Antigis's face softened, a trace of pleading behind his eyes. "Allow me to lead the strike," he said. "This mission is too dangerous, and our plight too great to risk your life, my captain. Without you there is no mission. Even now we hold to our cause by a mere thread. Were you to be lost, then so too would be McCrag. You know this to be true." Antigi stepped forward, allowing the light to fall on his face and armour. The effect was not unlike a bodily halo. "I entreat you, liege, let me do this service. I shall not fail you." At first, Cestus had thought to deny him, but he knew his brother Ultramarine was right. Cestus was acutely aware of the other combat squads mustering on the deck behind him, readying to take to the assault boats. "It would do me great honour to have you, brother Antigis, as my representative," he said, and clapped Antigis on the shoulder. "My lord," the fellow Ultramarine intoned, and bowed to his knee. "No, Antigis," said Cestus, grasping his battle brother's shoulder to stop him mid-genuflect. "We are equals, and such deference is not necessary." Antigis rose and nodded instead. "Courage and honour, my brother," said Cestus. "Courage and honour," Antigis replied, and turned to walk away towards the assault boats. The words were distant now, and Antigis crushed whatever sentiment they held as he intoned the oaths of battle. The world-eaters were similarly engaged, their lips moving in entreaty to their weapons and armaments that they should not fail them, and rather that they be covered in glory and speak with righteous anger. The warriors of the 12th Legion were well armed with chain axes and storm shields. They bore sidearms too, but Antigis suspected that they were rarely drawn. World-eaters fought up close in face-to-face melee, where the force of a charge and the shock of their ferocity counted the most. Antigis steeled himself and mouthed the name of Rabut Gilliman as the assault boat screamed towards its destination. The dockmaster had demanded to know why prior notification had not been given for the arrival of such an enormous ship. His obstinate and imperious attitude had faltered and withered upon the arrival of the Astartes on his deck. Once Altis had gained entry to the observation balcony, he had had the dockmaster put his deck crews to work to receive the Furious Abyss. Violence at this point was unnecessary. To the menials and underlings of Baca Triumvirate 14, they were still Astartes, and as such their word carried the authority of the Emperor. No man of the Imperium would dare brook that.
From the observation balcony overlooking the battleship dock, Altis could see the automated coolant tanks picking their way through the docking clamps and other dockside detritus towards the towering shape of the furious abyss. The dock was a hive of activity, track servitors and human indentured workers bustling back and forth on loaders, carrying massive fuel drums and swathes of heavy piping. The frenetic scene, fraught with activity, was as a mustering of ants before the towering hive that was the Word-Bearer's ship. It was the first time Altis had been able to truly appreciate the vessel's gigantic size. Like a city of crenellated towers, arching spires and fanged fortress-like decks, it dwarfed the puny dock, easily clearing the highest antennae and cranes. The book, resplendent upon the Furious's prow, easily eclipsed the observation building in which Altis was standing.
"We are in control," Altis voxed privately through his helmet array.
The dockmaster busied at his consoles with the massive ship's sudden arrival.
"Good," said Zadkiel, back on the ship. "Did you encounter any resistance?"
"They accept the authority of the Astartes like the dutiful and deluded lapdogs they are, my lord,"
Altis replied, looking around at the scholar coven. These warriors had been assembled from the word-bearers under Zadkiel's command, who showed the greatest adherence to Lorgar's word. They were all more recent recruits to the Legion, all from Colchis, and all dedicated scholars of Lorgar's writings. They were motivated not by the glory of the Great Crusade, but by the ideology of the word-bearers. Zadkiel greatly valued such followers, since they could be counted on to support the Legion's latest endeavours, which would be sure to bring the Word-Bearers into conflict with elements of the Imperium before long. Altis looked over at the man he would soon kill, once preparations were fully underway, and reasoned that the conflicts were already beginning to come about. The fact meant absolutely nothing to him. Altis had no loyalty, save to the Word. There was nothing in the galaxy in that moment other than that which was written. The novice smiled. This day, his destiny would be etched in the Word for all time.